Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John at home in the Northland, Nate Bucati and Jake Gutierrez in Overland Park, and Mike Boddicker is on the phone. Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
How are you?
Good. Everything's great, man. No rain right now, so happy.
What do you think of baseball right now and all the conversations that we're hearing about?
Pretty typical. Pretty typical of what goes on when the owners and the players get together. It's been that way since I can remember. So it's kind of tough. It's bad for baseball, bad for the fans, but it is a business, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to save as much money as possible, both sides. So, and that's how business works. And I know it's not good for the fans to hear, but you know, it's all the owners would have to do is, and this is how it's been for years, is open their books and show this is what we're losing, and this is why we got to do it. But they won't do that. So, you know, it's like you guys were talking about on 38th the spot. I mean, they're going to stop paying these minor league kids. You know, what's it going to cost them, $1 million for 3 months? that's like a dollar bill in your pocket for them. These, you know, they're worth billions of dollars. Some situations are different. I really feel bad for the ownership group here in Kansas City because they just got the team. And we're excited, and it's just, I really feel bad for them. I really do. This could have been a fun year for them.
Let's, I wanted to kind of go down a different road here, Bod, about just, you mentioned the minor league players for the Oakland A's. They're going to stop getting paid. The A's announced that. The A's have furloughed a bunch of their staff, all those things. By the way, I'd like to always make sure we remember those people, you know, the people that work for the teams. A lot of, not all baseball players, but a lot of them can absorb a year's worth of missing work. But yes. A lot of those people that work in the clubhouse and all those things, they can't. But I was listening. Petro did an interview yesterday where they were talking about the whole concept of the CBA, and one of the things they brought up was the idea of expansion. That'll allow the owners to make some of their money back, so they can charge $1 billion per expansion team and put a couple new teams in. But it also talked about how Major League Baseball, before this even started, was talking about contracting a lot of their minor league teams.
Right.
Minor league seasons are going to be canceled. They're going to shorten the draft to just 5 rounds. And that they were saying that basically baseball had decided, through their analytics people, to start relying more on colleges to be a free minor league for them, kind of the way that, you know, look, that's what the NFL has. They've got a free minor league system in college football. It's not necessarily ideal because those coaches are coaching to win games instead of coaching to develop players for a specific system. But what I'm wondering is, how is college baseball going to come out of all this? Especially if college football takes a massive hit financially, because college football kind of carries the finances for a lot of those other sports, including baseball right now.
All the sports.
So what do you think is going to happen to college baseball out of all this? And then what's the knock-on effect to what happens to the minor leagues from all of this?
Well, the thing is, there are colleges who have dropped baseball programs. Iowa State no longer has a baseball program. It's terrible. The bottom line is, it's about money, saving money. Can we save money if we do this? Can we save money if we do that? It's wrong. If that's the case, Major League Baseball is going to have to step in and kind of support these college programs. If they want to use them as a minor league system, then they're going to have to come in and support them, because colleges aren't going to, you know, keep baseball around, especially if football doesn't get going this fall. It's going to be a crazy thing. I don't know how they're going to do it. All this stuff. I really feel bad for the minor league kids. I feel bad for the kids who, you know, were. I was an eighth rounder when I got drafted. I got drafted first time when I was in high school. I was a sixth rounder. These guys, they're going to get, hey, here's $10,000 if you want to play. And that's not gonna do a whole lot for a guy's bank account and surviving. I mean, it costs money to live. $10,000 is not gonna cut it. So, and they don't pay them very well in the lower minor leagues anyway. So, you have to get some time in and get to AAA to make decent money. You know, it's. Everybody sees Major League Baseball and see baseball players. Oh, they're making tons of money. A lot of them aren't. And like you said, some of them can survive a year or more without playing. But there's a lot of guys who can't. And the minor leagues are really going to take a hit. I don't like the idea of losing a bunch of minor league teams. I mean, not only for the kids, but for the cities who have them. That's big for those cities. I think it's wrong.
How would you have handled all this if you were a player during the situation?
I do whatever the union says. We've always had a great union, and even sometimes you don't agree with. Well, it's kind of like politics. You might not agree with what happens, but hey, you go along with whatever is voted on. So, I mean, you can discuss it with them and give your input, but every team has a player representative and a backup guy that goes in too. So there's a couple guys from each team that are in these meetings generally. And I mean, they're discussing. It always boils down to, if you're losing that much money, you show us. No, we can't show you our books. I've heard that many times. No, you can't see our books. Well, then how do we know where you're losing the money? You know, they're not very transparent. Let me put it that way.
Who were the player reps when you were with Baltimore and then when you were with Kansas City?
Oh, I can't even remember who Kansas City was. I remember Baltimore, Scotty McGregor, and Boston was Wes Gardner. And I was just a backup in Boston. That was the only time I ever was involved in any of that stuff. But I mean, they come back and talk to all the players and say, hey, here's the deal, here's what happened, blah, blah, blah. And this is where we're at. What do you think? And then, you know, they get our opinion on stuff and take it back to the players' union and go from.
So you were the backup in Boston?
Yeah.
And so is that something that they've you're picked for that, or did you volunteer? How did you end up being involved?
I volunteered for it. I mean, I've been in the league for a while then, and had you know, like, you could actually say something. You know, in that situation, I'm second year guy. You got to have a little bit of time in to be able to go in there and say, no, that's not right, or yeah, that's okay.
So when I look at this proposal, Bod, from the owners, the way they want to make a sliding scale for how much of a pay cut you're going to take. Basically, the players that are on richer contracts would take a larger percentage pay cut than the guys that are making less money, which I wonder if those owners would feel the same way about a tax rate like that.
No. Yeah, that's exactly right.
That kind of made me laugh when I saw that. I was like, boy, I feel like they probably are against that type of a tax rate.
Yeah,
but
sure they are.
But it seemed to me like maybe that's an attempt to create a little division among the players. Because if you're a player that's making $500,000 a year, first of all, you haven't been in the league that long.
No.
So you haven't made that much money yet relative to a Mike Trout who's on a $37 million deal and has already made enough money that he's good for the rest of his life no matter what. Do you think they're trying to maybe drive a wedge you know, try to show, get a little division going among the players by...
They've tried that before.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. It really doesn't work. I don't understand why they keep trying it, because it doesn't work. That's the one thing when we get together, well, I don't know what it is like it is now, but back then it was basically players get together and say, hey, no matter what happens, they're not going to do this to us. We're going to stick together and we're going to do this. And the younger guys really don't say a whole lot. They know, because, you know, basically you're told, hey, you're going to make your money down the road if you do this. Otherwise, it's going to get bad. And so they, you know, it affects your pension, it affects everything. So they understand, and it's never worked, and I don't think it's going to work this time. But, you know, eventually we're running out of time is what the deal is. And if we're going to have baseball, they're going to have to, somebody's going to have to bite the bullet, and I don't think it's going to be the players.
Mike Boddicker is our guest. So, Mike, we were talking with Jamie Bloomer yesterday. He's starting to work with...
Oh, he is. Okay. Yeah, here we go.
With some of his young students. And, Nate, you want to go over that story again where Bloomer was able to help you? Because, Mike, I know you've worked with a number of... your boys, but also a number of other young baseball players, and so we were seeking some advice from Bluma how to get, especially if you got pitchers and young arms to take care of, or how the best way to get the kids back into baseball shape. And then Nate Bucati fired off some good questions. He's been working with his son, and Bluma was really able to guide him into the right direction. So, do you mind? Could we pick your brain a little bit?
Sure.
Oh, here we go. Nate, do you have any
so
you want to give him some background on this now?
Yeah, I mean, it's, so for reference, my son is not a year-round baseball player. He hadn't played any baseball since last he didn't even play in the fall. He played last spring. So good. You know, it's been a while.
I think every kid should play multiple sports when they're young.
Thank you. That's what we're trying to do. We're playing each sport when it's in season, and you know, and
that's what you should do.
As he gets older, he'll you know, kind of migrate towards what he loves the most.
Exactly.
But so I was like, you know, hey, we haven't had any baseball practice because they've been canceled. We probably need to get your arm in shape a little bit, get you out catching some fly balls. So I took him down to the park by our house, and I was hitting him fly balls. And he was throwing them back into me after every one. And after about 15 fly balls, he's like, man, my dad, my arm is really sore and really tired. And so I asked Bluma, how can I hit him some more fly balls without his arm getting so tired? He said, you just have him drop them in a bucket out in the outfield and then bring them in.
That's right. That's exactly.
I was like,
that's exactly what you do.
See, that's why we have the experts on Sports Radio 810. So.
Yep.
That's good stuff.
Used to do the same thing. They would take extra ground balls, and instead of throwing them across the field or throwing them in, they would just have a bucket set there. Take a ground ball, drop it in the bucket. Catch a ground ball, drop it in the bucket. Bring the bucket in.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you about...
That's why Bloom was a paid instructor.
That's right.
See?
Huh?
That's right.
I wish one of you two would have helped run our practices at Bishop Ward High School, because we never did that, and my arm was killing me at the end of every practice.
Yeah. Well, that and you probably threw wrong. So.
Well, and I also weighed about 130 pounds soaking wet, so I didn't exactly have a strong arm either.
Well, that's true. I mean, a lot of it is just true. It's about how you throw the ball.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like anything else. You just can't overdo something. No matter what age you are, you're going to hurt. Or you're going to hurt something. So, yeah, I mean, you can get a lot in without throwing, you know. I mean, you can get a lot of fly balls, a lot of ground balls. We used to use a bucket all the time. Guys used to use a bucket in the big leagues out there during workouts before games. They want some extra ground balls they didn't want to throw in the bucket. No one remembers.
Well, so can you give parents a couple of tips or some instruction, if especially if they've got a young pitcher that they're trying to get back into shape, get back into baseball? Yeah. We don't want any injuries, and so what advice would you give to parents out there that are getting their kids ready for baseball?
Well, number one, most kids are very resilient, and they can go forever as far as playing. The throwing is the issue. Running, they can run. Hitting, they can hit. But the throwing is the issue. You're throwing the ball correctly is the whole key. Across the diamond, pitching, whatever it may be. And I've told kids, you know, pitching basically is an elevated game of catch. That's all it is. It's an elevated game of catch where play catch. That's the best thing you can do to strengthen your arm as a pitcher. You know, everybody wants to throw off a mound. Hey, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. I learned to pitch playing catch. I would try to hit the guy in his right shoulder. I'd try to hit the guy in the left shoulder when I was playing catch. A lot of coaches now, they'll make sure that the guy you're playing catch with, you know, give him a target. Get a glove up there. Give him something to shoot at. And that way you're focused in and your release point starts to become the same. Just little things like that. I mean, I can't say enough about just playing catch. You don't have to play long toss. You don't have to go crazy and throw hard. Just get your delivery down and strengthen your arm. And you don't have to do it a long time. I mean, everybody's a little bit different what they can handle, but you can tell when a kid's tired. And a kid will tell you, hey, I'm getting tired or my arm hurts a little bit. Stop. That's it. You're done. And by the next day, a young kid, he bounced right back.
So one of the things I struggle with when I play catch with my son, you talk about like the proper fundamentals. He gets lazy with his footwork. You know, he doesn't turn his feet all the way so that he gets his hips and his legs into his throw. And I know that puts more pressure on his arm and his shoulder. So I try to remind him. But then I feel like I'm correcting his mechanics on every single throw when we play catch. And then it just wears him out, and he doesn't want to play catch with me anymore. Like, yeah, how do you find the right balance of trying to teach him the right fundamentals, but at the same time not wearing the kid out to the point where he doesn't even want to play catch with it? You know what I'm saying?
Well, fundamentals are funny because everybody's different. I mean, you watch even some big leaguers, how they throw, how they hit. You never teach that, okay? Let the kids figure it out. The one thing I like to keep kind of harping on them, make sure your elbow is shoulder level when you throw or above it. Don't let your elbow drop, because that's where you get the sore arm. The rest of the stuff, it'll fall into place, but if that elbow is not shoulder level or above, you're going to have a sore arm. And I can explain that to you when I come in, if we ever get back in the studio.
Mike Boddicker, let's take a break. When we come back, can we have some fun with you? Are you in a fun mood?
Festive. Very festive, Stephen. Yes.
Did you know that you recently pitched for the 83 Baltimore Orioles simulation dream bracket at MLB.com, brought to you, I believe, by DraftKings. Can we talk about how you did when we come back? Can we go over the box scores, please?
Well, sure, why not? I mean, I've been on YouTube on 83 World Series game. Everybody's calling up. You need to look at this. I said, I was there. I don't need to look at it.
I'm very excited by this. You took on, you had a big series against the 83 Orioles matchup against the 0-2 Angels. How do you feel about that right now on paper?
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. It was. Jake? Nate?
Wait a second. Was I pitching in Anaheim, and was it day or night?
Oh, I don't. We'll find out about that.
I'll get to owned Vlad Guerrero, though.
Do you guys think Mike Boddicker in the simulation fared well against the 0-2 Angels, or do you think He got what Keith Hernandez sometimes describes a pitcher getting getting hammered. What do you think happened?
That's happened before.
I got faith in Bod.
Against the O2 Angels.
I think Bod did fine.
All right.
I think Bod got it. I think Bod got his tits lit.
Oh, really has.
Oh no, oh, boy! Never happened to you, Bod?
Oh yeah.
Sound familiar?
It happened in front of millions of people in the playoffs. So yeah, it's happened.
Felt like it happened to me last night, and I don't even pitch.
Just so like he said, "Oh, Bodker."
Let's find out. The king of analytics. Let's find out how Mike Boddicker did in this huge simulation that people have been wagering on, Jake. I don't know if you're interested in that. Did you have any idea you maybe could have had some action on Mike Boddicker pitching?
Well, here's where we're at, Steven.
What?
We go into this COVID, this quarantine, and I'm dying to gamble.
There's nothing
to gamble on.
You've got a giant gambling itch that you're looking to scratch.
Yeah. And so then WrestleMania comes out, and then NASCAR
I offered help at WrestleMania, and you declined. Huh? There was a lot of money to be made behind Bray Wyatt, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
And you resisted that on this show.
But that's because Pounders is his own man. He's got to make his own bets.
We were going to go in on The Fiend. And you did not want any action.
He's a drunk man. He can't see me.
Now you can't see any of my money.
Right. Let's find out how Mike Boddicker did against the O2 Angels after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So this dream bracket presented by DraftKings. They're already on Dream Bracket 2. The first one was a simulation that pitted all-time teams from organizations against each other. The Yankees shockingly ended up winning that one. But I will note that for the Orioles, and this is just the best team, I'd like to know more about how they came up with this, by the way. It's a collection of current stars and legends that are put together for the all-time teams for each of the 30 major league franchises. And Mike Boddicker was selected to the all-time team for the Baltimore Orioles. You were part of the pitching staff. What? That's quite an honor.
Yeah, considering that
Jim Palmer. You want to hear the staff?
Palmer, Flanagan, Cuellar, not Cuellar.
Cuellar?
McNally. Cuellar was
Here it is. Jim Palmer, Mike Messina, Dave McNally, Mike Flanagan, Scott McGregor, Mike Cuellar, Mike Boddicker, Zach Britton, Darren O'Day, Greg Olson, and Tippy Martinez.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's a damn good staff, Mike.
I was going to say... Pat Dobson wasn't in there, huh?
Nope. Wow. No, you stole the spot.
Yeah, I feel bad.
Well, Dobson
was a hell of a pitcher.
Now this is gonna offend Nate, but you're gonna have to accept this criticism, Nathan. First of all, here's the Royals pitching staff they had for the all time team. This was the last dream bracket they had. Saves, David Cohn, Zach Greinke, Dennis Leonard, Kevin Apier, Mark Gubiza, Paul Splittorff, Wade Davis, Greg Holland, Jeff Montgomery, and Dan Quisenberry. Good God, how about that bullpen?
Oof.
Wade Davis, Greg Holland, Jeff Montgomery, Dan Quisenberry. Give us a lead. Ow. See you tomorrow. Bye bye.
Oh. No. Give us a lead in a second.
Hey there. Oof. Now here's my gripe about the Royals. This was their starting nine. Salvador Perez, okay. First base Mike Sweeney, yes or no?
Hitting-wise, yes. Fielding-wise, nope.
Second base, Frank Wyatt. Third base, George Brett. Shortstop, Fred Patek. The outfield, left fielder, Alex Gordon. Center fielder, Willie Wilson. Right fielder, Carlos Beltran. DH, Bo Jackson. Nate, I know you love him, but no. Not ahead of Hal McCray. I apologize to the Bo Jackson lovers, but I am...
No, I agree with you, actually.
It's going to be a no for me, dog.
Hal McCray needs to be in there. Jeez.
the bench was then. Now their bench was Hal McRae, Whit Merrifield, Lorenzo Cain, John Mayberry, Amos Otis, Daryl Porter. I might put John Mayberry in at first base.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I think I might go John Mayberry at first base and Hal McRae at DH.
Can I give you a hot take that a lot of people will find controversial?
As long as it's steaming hot.
It might not be steaming hot. It might be lukewarm.
Okay, fine.
Amos Otis over Willie Wilson in center field.
I'm here for it. That's fine.
I'm good for that, too.
Bo Jackson, if he's going to be on the team, needs to be out in the field, by the way. He doesn't. I mean, maybe his biggest strength as a baseball player, to me, was what he could do defensively.
Yeah.
I mean, he had maybe the greatest throwing arm of an outfielder ever.
And he could cover some ground.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is pretty good athlete.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I would never take him at DH over Hal McRae.
No, Hal McRae was one of the all time greatest DHs there was.
And, you could make a case for him over Alex Gordon. I'm not saying I will make that case, but you could in left field.
A lot of gold gloves in Alex's pocket.
Yep.
Let's bring Jake in on this one. Jake, we allow Nate to make that case. Bo Jackson over Alex Gordon.
No.
Come on, Jakey. Stand up for your man.
Well,
or
I mean,
sit down and
I'll
do
be
nothing.
Honest with you. That's not where I went when I'm looking at that lineup. I started looking at Alcides Escobar over Freddy Patek.
No way.
Nope.
No way.
No way, sir. Well, no.
I mean, it's not that outlandish.
I like Esky, but man, Freddy Patek.
Everybody has their opinions, though, gentlemen.
Thank you, Boddicker.
Not that he's the best, but could I have UL Washington and his toothpick?
Yes.
Toothpick.
In some way possible, could I get him incorporated into this event? So, was there any pitchers that were left out for the Royals here that you...
No, I mean, as long as they got Leo in there. Leo is one of my all-time favorites. I love Dennis Leonard.
Did Steve Busby make that list? I didn't hear his name.
No.
Oh, there you go.
So.
There you are.
That was the only name that came to my mind.
Yeah. They pretty much covered the best pitchers the Royals ever had. That's a pretty good group.
Jake, could we get a round of applause for Nate paying attention and making an excellent point right there with Steve Busby? Can we, the studio audience would like to respond to that immediately.
The only other name,
very good.
The only other name too from the pitchers that would be Split, but I think
no,
Paul
Split's on there.
Oh, he was on there. Okay,
on
yes,
there.
Sir.
Okay,
got to have Split, or good. I'm out. Okay, so Mike, now so that dream bracket of all time teams owned by the Yankees. This next simulation is just specific teams like. Mm. The 83 Orioles and the 02 Angels and just the best teams that they were able to come up with, you know, arbitrarily, but still. And so for example, the Orioles had a few teams in there. The 1970 Orioles made it. And this was, they picked 64 teams. So this is, I think it's awesome. I've enjoyed following along with this. And then the 83 Orioles were in it, Mike. And I was reading an Orioles fan page, and they expected no problems for the Orioles in the opening round of 64 against the 02 Angels.
Yeah, but they didn't have to face that lineup.
Right. And so I hate to...
That was a pretty good lineup.
I hate to inform you that the 83 Orioles lost in seven games to the 02 Angels.
Mm-hmm.
In those games, Cal Ripken Jr. Had hits in five of the games. Game three, he was 2-for-4 with a double, a home run. Eddie Murray went 3-for-4 in that game. It was a fine game. That was the best game of the series. And it says here, Mike Boddicker led the pitching staff in the two games he started. He gave up only two runs and ended up with an ERA of 1.32. So Mike Boddicker really handcuffed the 0-2 Angels in this simulation.
How's your arm feeling, Mike?
You started game one, went 7 1/3 with six hits, one run, one walk, six strikeouts.
How many pitches?
Doesn't say. We're gonna say just for these purposes, 172 pitches
go.
For Mike Boddicker.
Yeah, I was gonna say anything under 140, he's pissed.
You inexplicably gave up a solo home run to Adam Kennedy, but so what? You outdueled.
How did I give up a home run? That's Come That's on, terrible. Not Adam Kennedy.
Right. Stewart came in and closed the show for you, so
mm-hmm.
you were lucky there. But then after that, Storm Davis failed you. Who else pitched? Scott McGregor and Kevin Apier was the matchup in Game 3. Boy, isn't that a matchup you'd love to...
Oh, boy.
You know what? Scott McGregor got the win, and Martinez got the save. So you came back in Game 5, and 6 3, 3 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. And again, this time you gave up a solo home run to Darren Erstad. So
oh, that's
I don't know
okay.
how you feel about that.
Erstad
Is that better?
Could hit.
Right.
Yeah.
That was on short rest, too, Bod. Good stuff.
That's okay. I don't mind short rest.
You did very well. Are you excited by this at all? Because
I'm glad I didn't have to really face that lineup.
So the simulated games are being played on MLB's out of the park baseball. Have you guys seen this by any chance?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
have you?
No.
And so my buddy Anthony Gialdi is knee deep in this, and I've and this is me talking that loves rotisserie and loves all this stuff. I look at it, and I've said if I get started in this, this could be the end of me. It's like so in depth, and you could do that. I mean you could run the organization. You're the GM. You're the manager. So like someone that's really suffering from missing baseball, this is it's wonderful, but I've resisted it because I just feel like then all of a sudden Dad's been on the iPad for 10 hours screaming at it about his bullpen blew it, you know. So I this that's where that would be headed. Okay,
well, that's now you know how I felt sometimes.
Well,
yeah, that's just the way it is. I mean, that's Baseball is a funny game. Anything can happen at any time. That's what I miss about it. Every time you think you've seen everything, you haven't.
Right.
Something else pops up. You go, wow, I've never seen that before.
I am very happy to report that in the round of 64, and you can go to MLB.com and check this out, and guess what? You know what? It's fun, but it scratches a little bit of that itch, Jake. The 85 Royals beat the 72 A's in the first round. Hey, let's get a round of applause for the 85 Royals taking down the 72 A's.
That was a good pitching staff, that 85 Royals.
Now they're going to take on. Mike, what can you tell us about the 1954 Cleveland Indians? That's who the Royals are facing in the second round.
Hal Ostrowski was on that team.
Okay. Who are you picking there?
He's from my hometown. Who am I picking? I'll take the Royals.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got to take the Royals.
Yeah.
That team was amazing. I love that. I love Steve Balboni. Gosh. Good bunch of good guys, too.
At one point, did you guys realize that I'm paying too much attention to the dream bracket at MLB.com? Was it right at the beginning, or is it now starting to sink into?
Steve, you got to get out of the house, bro.
I do get out of the house, but I need stats. I need box scores. I'm looking at box. I looked at box scores. I looked at fake box scores for about 45 minutes yesterday.
No box scores. You don't get any box scores. I love box scores.
You know what I'm realizing?
I was irrationally excited about your starts, and then I was like, that's right, Boddicker. Shut him down. Not once, but twice. And I was pissed that you guys lost, but still, I don't know.
I was a little low in the strikeouts. I was kind of disappointed on that, but that's okay.
You know
what?
Good team. Hey, home runs are okay when there's no one on base, Mike.
Yeah, solo.
That's
all
right.
That's what I was trying to tell you earlier. It makes a big difference in Anaheim. If you're pitching in Anaheim, whether you're pitching during the day or night, during the day the ball flies out of there, just jumps out of there. At night, it just dies.
Don't they have bad shadows out there, though, too, Bod?
Oh, it wasn't bad back in the day. I don't know if they changed anything, but, they started it. It's funny. If they start that kind of dusky time, it's tough to see the ball. But I remember pitching both night and day games out there, and I remember a day game where I gave up 4 home runs. 4 solo home runs, and I won 5-4. And the ball was just jumping. Every ball that went in the air, I held my breath. It was like, oh, my gosh, is that going to go out too? And our next game I pitched there was a night game, and they would wail on it, and our outfielders would just stop and catch it. It was like, whoa, what a difference. It's a huge difference out there. I hated pitching day games in Anaheim.
By the way, sad update. After the Royals won 4-1 in 13 innings in Game 1, then they lost Games 2, 3, 4, and 5 to the 54 Indians. So screw this simulation.
I always hated the 54 Indians. Never liked that team.
Who were their pitchers?
Garbage.
Bob Feller?
Garbage.
Who were their pitchers?
Early win. Early win. They had 23-win season, you know.
Yeah. Win had gave up one run in 7 2/3. But Saves was able to hold the Indians to four hits and one run. The only damage done by Vic Wirtz's solo home run.
Ooh, Dick Wirtz.
Oh, I love this so much.
Was Ted Kozinski on that team?
Let me see if I can find a box score somewhere. Mike Garcia had a nice game against the Royals. See, I figured this would be right up your alley. You can get your sons set up on this. Why don't you? They stream some of these on MLB.com.
Yeah, I got a glove Ted Kozinski glove in my case at home.
Yeah, I don't see him.
Nope. Okay.
But I also saw. I'm not seeing George Brett come up with this is garbage. Oh, Brett's not going to go 1-for-4 and then 0-for-4 and then 0-for-4 in this series. Thank you, not. And so this is how you know it's just a simulation. So
that's right. I probably would have got my test set if I had a pitch against you 2002. Yeah.
That's it. So that 83 Orioles team that actually made some noise in the dream bracket, if that's the best team that you were ever on, what would be the second best team that you were ever on?
Probably the 90 Red Sox.
How talented were the Royals teams compared to those teams that you were on?
I tell you what, the 80s Royals team was as good as anybody in the game. We hated coming in to face the Royals. Man, oh, man. Well, you know, look who they had to hit, and look at their pitching staff. Man, and then nobody could hit Quinn Day. Nobody. I mean, every Hall of Famer that I played with hated Cincinnati. They just shudder. And you mentioned Quinn. It's like, oh, God, I hate facing him.
That's why I always thought it was
Dan
so bizarre.
Dan Quisenberry was that good. He was just, you'd sit there and go, they can't do anything with him.
You know, that's what was always so bizarre to me, because obviously back then, you know, National League and American League teams really didn't see each other at all.
No.
And that always baffled me that he had such a bad 1980 World Series against the Phillies, especially when I hear you describe how and it was proof was there how good he was, but especially for players really getting the first look at him. Didn't that surprise you that he had such a bad 80 World Series?
You know, we're human beings. We go through periods of times where it's kind of a roller coaster. And he might have hit that downward swing on the roller coaster right then.
I remember they had a couple of Hall of Famers on that team, too, so, you know.
Yeah, I bet George Brett used to sit there, and he'd go through some – there were small periods, but he would come back and sit down, and he said, you could put 9 guys in a canoe at second base, and I'll hit it in a canoe right now. You know, it's just one of those things where you're going through that little bit of a down period, and then the next thing you know, a check swing, broken bat hit, might get you out of it, and all of a sudden you go on a tear again. And that's baseball. You know, baseball's a roller coaster. It's, you know, and great hitters like George Brett, that roller coaster is just a tiny little roller coaster. There's not much of a drop. There's a little dip, and then all of a sudden it's back up. Where, you know, most normal people, you got that way up and then way down, and way up and then way down. So, they used to call it peaks and valleys. You try to stay out of the valley. Don't be in there too long.
Man, that I'm that 91 Royals team was loaded. Just looking back at the missed opportunities that the Royals had in the early 90s.
Oh, yeah. We had some players, man. We had some players. I don't know how that didn't pan out. We had way too much talent to not be good.
Front four of Kevin Apier, Brett Saberhagen, Mike Boddicker, and Mark Gubiza. Jeff Montgomery is your closer. Tom Gordon is your do-it-all.
Not bad, was it?
Not bad at all. Luis Aquino was pretty damn good.
Yeah. We had good pitching, and look at our position players. Whew. If Bo wouldn't have got hurt, that really screwed everything up. But we had Gibson, George. We had some players, man.
Well, that thing about Bo, when we were talking about my statement that, you can make a case in terms of him and Alex Gordon, when you look at like what they've did in their careers, you can't really make that case.
No,
Alex has had a better career.
If Bo wouldn't have got hurt, he might have won 8 gold gloves.
Dude, he was trending in a way where he was going to be a far better baseball player than Alex Gordon. But we never got to see it happen, so that's all hypothetical. He did have a couple years, though. He hit, 32 home runs 1 year and 28 the other, and his on-base percentage was starting to trend upwards, and his athleticism, Alex Gordon's a phenomenal athlete, but I've never seen an athlete that could hold a candle to Bo Jackson.
I was in Baltimore playing with Royals at the time. There was a ball hit, and they've shown it a bunch of times. I was there on the bench watching it. There was a ball hit, and it looked like it was going to hit the outfield wall in left center. Bo ran it down and ran sideways for about 5-6 steps on the wall sideways. Everybody's mouth just dropped. It was like, and they looked at each other. Did you just see that? Did that just happen? And then no normal man could do that. Ever. And you're going, wow, we just saw something that it's going to be on highlight film forever. It was amazing. The ball, number one, the ball should have never been caught. But his speed was just, he ran it down. And it was either run through the wall or run alongside the wall. And that's what he did. He just ran alongside the wall, on the wall, sideways. He was going that fast. It's like a race car, when you get they're going around the track and they get that curve, that turn, how it's pitched way up. That's exactly what he did, man. It was some kind of thing to see in person.
Mike Boddicker, thank you so much for the time. Jake wants me to point out that 91 Royals team carried by their 1-2 punch at catcher, Mike McFarland and Brent Main. And so that clearly was the strength of the team.
I love those
right?
two guys. I love That's both right. of them. They're top notch. Great catching staff right there. Not only receiving, but just as people. Best people you're ever going to meet.
You're the man, Mike Boddicker. We appreciate your time.
Let's get back in studio, boys. We miss you.
Let's
Someday.
We miss
Someday.
You.
Someday.
As soon as Jake gets everything turned around with his financials, we're going to be all back.
Next Wednesday, Bod. Next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, Bod.
I'm hoping.
Okay. Getting the ship turned around.
I'll wear my industrial mask if you want me to.
Oh, it'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can do about Jake's financials first. We're taking a unique approach to this.
They're going
to
be just fine. We'll get you in studio next week.
We're going to start getting you betting on simulations now. Let's see if that can help.
Everything is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slice.
That's right.
Hey, tell Lezak I said hi, will you?
We will.
Yeah, we will.
Jake, of course, still reeling from this doping scandal in horse racing that has really set him on his ear. We will take a break back after this on WHB.